Hello and welcome to another edition of Teaching Restored, where we are your weekly teacher council meeting. Just look at it that way. We help you become better teachers of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm Kevin Jones.
And I'm Julie Hilliard. And I love that you framed it as our teacher council meeting. I just wish you'd counsel more with us. Will you please give us more feedback? We like feedback.
Please.
We want this to be more of a two-way street. We would love to know some of the topics that you'd like to cover, because we keep thinking of things that are helpful to us, but we would love to know that it's helpful to you too.
Yeah.
So from my own frame of reference, here is something that was helpful to me. You ready?
I'm ready. Let's hear it.
Okay. So the other day, like a few weeks ago, when we were studying in Mosiah and we were studying about Abinadi, I was listening to a podcast, the Unshaken podcast, and Jared Halverson described something. And I remember I was on a run and I'm listening and I'm like, oh, that is brilliant. And the framework that he set up really spoke to me. So what I want to do is I want to introduce the framework, because I think that the framework is something that can be really instructive to us as we shape our approach for teaching. And it can also be kind of like, to me, it was a little bit eye-opening about my role as a teacher and some of the things that I have historically maybe avoided just a teensy bit, I maybe shouldn't be avoiding. I promise I will explain all of that ambiguous setup. I know. Okay. I'll explain it, I promise. Right. Okay. So here is, and he used slightly different words than I'm going to use. I'm not going to do this perfectly. If Jared Halverson ever listened, he might be like, you're a pathetic substitute for my genius instruction. But if he listened, I'd be really flattered. So let me just set it up and probably do a bad job. But this is my simplistic mind. So Kevin, I have a slide. Would you please put the slide up for us?
Oh, there we go. Okay.
So this is what he set up. He set up this idea that we have like this access, right? And on the one hand, you've got this, you know, that's vertical, horizontal is the horizon. Okay, the vertical axis represents our knowledge, and the horizontal axis represents our behavior. And then where would you, Kevin, put absolute truth on this diagram?
I would assume at the top. I mean,
tippy top, right? So, oh, you're so smart. Okay, so absolute truth, if we're just kind of framing it, would be at the tippy top of this. This is the pinnacle of knowledge.
Yes.
Okay. And I think that I've said this before, but it's really important for us to understand that we have access to absolute truth only through the Holy Ghost. Like, we can't necessarily ourselves comprehend absolute truth in all cases, because what we do is we take, you know, what is revealed to us as absolute truth, and then we write a story about it, and we kind of wrap it up in our experience, and we wrap it up in what we already know. Mm-hmm. And so our comprehension of absolute truth might be a little bit different than absolute truth itself. Okay. So we need to be humble enough to know that our understanding of some concept, any concept, varies in terms of where it is on that horizontal axis. So I have another line. If you go to the next slide, I have another line that kind of says my understanding. And so if you think about any topic in the gospel, your understanding of that topic may be closer to absolute truth or farther away from absolute truth, depending on, you know, if it's something you've ever studied about, if it's a brand new concept to you, if it's something that you've had experience with versus never had experience with in your life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for example, your understanding of the principle of tithing and the fact that tithing is 10%, you're like, oh, great, that's really, really clear to me. And it might be higher on that axis versus my comprehension of the concept of grace might be, ooh, I've studied about it. It's just a little bit lower because I know that there's so much more to learn. And so it varies where it is on the axis. Do you think it matters where it is? Like, really, truly, do you think that we are judged by where our understanding is on that axis?
Okay, so you asked two different questions there. Does it matter, number one, and are we judged on that? So does it matter? I think, yes, it does matter. Because if our goal is to become more like our Savior, who knows absolute truth and acts on absolute truth, then we want to approach that as much as possible. So yes, it does matter. But are we judged on that? I think we would be more judged on what direction is it going.
Okay, that's the concept that I wanted to get to. So I'm glad you actually kind of extrapolated that, because I hadn't really thought about how separate those two questions are. You're absolutely right. I think that we're judged on our effort, right? Sure. Like that we're the idea, not, and I don't even want to say judged.
Right, because that's exactly what I was thinking right as well, right?
Yeah. Wrong word. So let's think about this. And maybe a better word is, like, let's, this is the point that I want to get across. I'm just going to make the point. That's stupid. I don't need to ask a question. I'm just going to make the point. The point that I'm trying to make is that it's less about how perfectly we understand something and more about what we do with that understanding.
Okay, good. I like that.
Okay.
Sure.
So let's add another line to this. So let's figure out. So if you, there you go. That's it. If, so you notice where our behavior is. If our behavior matches our understanding and they really run parallel, no, hardly any space between the two.
Right.
What does that say about, like, it, how do I describe this? Mm-hmm. Like, what, that's more the point, right?
Right.
The point is we are aligning our behavior with what we understand.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so it's like that concept. To know and not to do is really not to know.
Yeah.
And so doing something about it is the point. Okay. So are there things that you understand that your behavior is not aligned with yet?
100%. Fasting.
100%. Every single one of us. Fasting.
Okay. I'm just throwing that out there. Fasting for me.
Yes. Okay. Here's one of mine. Patience.
Okay.
I understand that. I understand it's a virtue. Hmm. I'm so bad at it. Okay. So what happens if there's a gap? Go to the next slide real quick, if you will.
Okay.
Okay. Sometimes that gap is huge. Sometimes that gap is small. Every single one of us has some things that we kind of struggle, right, to align our behavior with our understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me what lies in the space between our behavior and our understanding.
For me, a little mental angst.
Okay. Dissonance. Because
it is. It is. I mean, okay. I'm take fasting. I'm kind of going off a little bit, but when I first started fasting, my parents said, okay, you're 8 years old. Why don't you start fasting? Okay. Yeah. I would throw up when I fasted.
Are you serious? Like you would actually puke or you would make yourself puke?
Actually, I would puke. I didn't have anything to puke because there was nothing in my stomach because I was fasting, but I would puke every time I fasted. I don't know what it was. Seriously.
You're like peeing over the toilet, bile's coming up.
It was.
Because you're like, look.
That's exactly what it was. And I had to.
Oh my gosh, I'm dying right now.
I had to work into, okay, I can do it. And still, you know, I'm 52 years old. I'm not 8 anymore. And I have this understanding of fasting and how awesome it is. I even have had experiences with fasting and the blessings of and the power of. And when I think of fasting next month, I'm like, oh, dang it. Is there a way I can get out of this? Is there, how can I not? Okay. Okay. I'm going to do it and I just don't do it like I know I should, but that behavior line is further down for me. I struggle with this. So that's there's my Kevin Jones weakness.
Okay. I love it so much. I have to tell you, I've got this friend who's so good at fasting. Like she chooses to fast almost every Sunday to get herself in the right frame of mind. I admire it so much, but I struggle every month too. And so part of why this is so funny to me is because I just assume you're so awesome at all of this because you're just so spiritual.
Oh, and really?
I struggle too. Like I really love food, but it is. And I do understand, like I do understand the blessings that come from it. I mean, I've even studied like this whole thing, like there's all of this research, and like Chinese medicine talks a lot about what it does to the qi and the flow and the this and the that, and all of these blessings and benefits, not just spiritually, but also physically from fasting. And it's awesome. Okay. Thank you for making that point so well. That was beautiful.
Good.
So in that gap lies hunger, but more than hunger, angst and cognitive dissonance and guilt.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. You put up the next one.
Okay.
So Jared Halverson, he calls it the guilt gap. Isn't that such an awesome term for it?
Yes. I like that.
It's so good, huh? And so I want us to examine this guilt gap for just a minute. So tell me what causes the guilt gap. Like, why can't you just be like, oh, I stink at fasting, and just hang out on that lower behavior line? Why is there that angst and that dissonance in it, in that space?
Because there are, well, if you ask my wife how many personalities I have, she would say many different personalities. But one.
I think we're both tired. Like everything feels funny to me right now.
Okay, so
you're saying feels so funny.
So I have to say this to everyone who's listening or watching. Julie and I, before this, we just got off doing workshops in other parts of the U.S. and flew separate, different workshops. And we both flew in late last night and got little sleep last night, and we're up early doing this. And so we may be a little giggly.
Like, I don't know what's wrong with me. When I get tired, I do. I get a little bit like everything feels funny.
Yes, so, I'm with you. So this is a funny topic. Okay, so anyway, so I have all these personalities, my wife says. And one of the personalities is, I want to be like Jesus. The other personality is, I don't care. I mean, not that I don't care about being, I mean, I don't care to fast. I really don't. I don't want to. I fasted last year. I'm good. Right? But the other one, okay, it's Fast Sunday. Oh, I should, I need to, I will, but you know what? I'm going to stay up late Saturday night and then eat my dessert. And you know what I'm going off. You know what helps me with fasting? And this truly works for me. If I drink a lot of water that night, it helps me not be as hungry the next day.
Bonus of this podcast is a strategy for feeling less hungry when fasting. Aren't you so glad you listened today?
So now you
there
know.
There you go.
So it's me. It's an internal struggle. This guilt gap is created by an internal struggle, and I feel both ways at the same time, and that's why I have guilt.
Okay, so actually, I think you identified something really interesting in that.
What's that?
You said you feel both ways at the same time. So the wrestle, the struggle in there is because you know better.
Yes.
There's always a wrestle in us that is this, it's almost like the divine within us is wrestling with the natural man, right? And so that wrestle causes that dissonance. But one of your coping strategies to avoid the discomfort is to not care. Right?
Well, yeah.
So, okay, sorry.
You're right.
Does that feel harsh? Are you hurting right now? Did I bruise your ego with that?
A tear. Okay. Come down. No, because that's basically what I said. I don't like to admit that, but yes, let's just say that.
Okay, so what are some other coping strategies that we have? Like, we want to avoid, I want you to think about people, for example, who like, you know better. Sometimes it's your children. Sometimes it's you, but it's easier sometimes to look at other people. And I'm not saying that we should do this with a judgmental eye in any way. I'm not trying to create judgment, but it's sometimes easier for us to like observe something that's outside of ourselves. And have you ever been having a conversation with somebody who has chosen to leave the church, but won't stop talking to you about it? And part of what you sense in them is this cognitive dissonance.
Right.
And sometimes what they're doing is they're giving you all of their justifications for why they've left. And it's because there is a guilt gap.
Yes.
It's because of this gap. And so one of the coping mechanisms becomes talking about it and justifying, rationalizing, giving all of your reasons, being logic, being analytical, and right. you kind of can talk yourself out of it. So it's almost like you do something, in some cases, to lower your understanding to meet your behavior. Mm. Right? Mm.
Sure. Yeah. I hadn't thought of it that way. I like that though.
So what other coping mechanisms might we have to deal with what's in the guilt gap? So I'm going to show you one. Be thinking about it though.
Okay. Be thinking about it.
And one comes to your mind, say it. But like, if you look at Mosiah chapter 12, for example, and this is where Abinadi starts talking to the people. And what you have in Mosiah chapter 12 is a group of people that know the law of Moses.
Yes.
That know, you know, that have been brought up and raised with this understanding. And then here they are with this unrighteous king, King Noah, who is a wine bibber. And all of these things, he's like trying to, you know, he's got all these wives and these concubines. And so basically the picture that's painted of him in the Book of Mormon is basically telling us that he's not living a righteous life. His life and the way that he's choosing to live is not aligned with the law of Moses or anything even close to it. And so we can assume, this is me kind of pulling something from it, because they understood the law of Moses, we can assume that maybe there were still some ritualistic or ceremonial practices that were going on, but that in terms of the point of the law of Moses, their behavior was a far cry from it. And so the people, when Abinadi comes in and he starts saying, dudes, you got to repent, bruh, it's time. The people, instead of being like, oh, Abinadi, thank you for reminding us of what we understand. Let's change our behavior to meet that. Like, that would be repentance, moving the behavior line, right? They say what?
They say, well, part of it, well, I don't know if this is what you're getting towards, but part of it is, yes, we understand already. We already know. But what they say they actually know is below what they actually know. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes. Okay. So you're talking about when they go and he starts talking about the law of Moses and they're like, yes, we know the law of Moses. You're teaching us the law of Moses. And they try and trip him up.
Yeah.
Right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
So think about what is that strategy? What, give a label to what they're trying to do.
Justify,
right? Using the law of Moses.
Yes.
So they use something righteous to justify their current behavior.
Yes.
Okay. So the other thing that they do is they go, how dare he judge you, King Noah? How dare he judge us?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So pointing a finger at somebody else is another strategy
another
that we
way.
Have.
Yeah.
How dare you judge me? You are so judgmental. You being judgmental of me, you're shaming me. You're, and we point the finger outside and that makes us feel better about the guilt gap, because all of a sudden we're like, oh, that's so not how Christ would do this.
Right.
How dare you?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And they do that. They go through and they're like, what, you know, this is verse 13 of chapter 12. Oh, King, what great evil hast thou done? Or
yes,
what great sin have thy people committed that we should be condemned of God or judged of this man? Behold, we are guiltless. And thou, O King, hast not sinned. Therefore, this man has lied.
So in that verse, and one thing I've noticed that thou hast not sinned, they have taken that, they have said, they have almost created their own understanding, which actually lowers the true understanding of what it really is.
So they are literally trying to move the line.
Yep.
But part of how they're doing it is, part of how they're eliminating that discomfort is by pointing a finger and saying, you're a liar.
Yeah.
You think you know, how dare you, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And so you could add a few labels that are familiar to us: defensive, blaming, judgmental, etc. So when you can somehow, instead of taking ownership or responsibility for something, you can, you know, hand it off and kind of rationalize it away or explain it and give the rocks to somebody else, so to speak. Like, this isn't my burden, this is yours. Mm-hmm. And you hand it off, then it helps you not feel as yucky in that guilt.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. So then you know, they cast him into prison. They do all of this stuff. They try to cross him. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, you know, debating, you can kind of like get people confused and try it. So we have all of these strategies. You can kind of come up with, you know, some more. You, people try to dilute the truth. They try to discredit the truth. They try to dodge, like work around the truth, so to speak. They try to explain it away. So there are all of these different things that we do to eliminate the discomfort in the guilt gap. And it was interesting because Noah, well, so let me actually, I want to read this quote first. That this quote is so awesome. It's Bruce C. Hafen. Can you put it up on the thing?
Yep.
Okay. Listen to this. This is so good. It's a drop the mic quote, in my opinion. I have found in working with others that many of our decisions are influenced more than they should be by our desire to avoid sorrow, distress, frustration, and other kinds of psychic suffering. We understandably prefer almost anything to that kind of pain. Our culture has become as skillful in the art of neutralizing emotional and spiritual pain as in sedating physical pain. Medicine is, in a sense, symbolic of our age. Unquestionably, medicine is often a blessing, but as all must know by now, the drugs of our time, both the literal and the figurative kinds, also offer escape, not only from pain, but also from responsibility and reality. And thus, some people have developed an instinctive inclination to chart their course, both short and long range, by choosing those alternatives that will minimize their exposure to the uncomfortable consequences of taking life as it comes. Avoiding or escaping discomfort becomes almost a guiding purpose in life, as if getting around such pitfalls were the essence of a happy life. Mm-hmm. The gospel teaches, however, that the essence of painful experience is as important an element in man's capacity ultimately to experience joy.
So it's not just avoiding, yes, mic drop, it's not avoiding the pain. It's, we have to do that to enjoy the joy. I mean, to obtain the joy.
Yeah. Will you go back to the diagram?
Yep.
So it's not about avoiding pain. It's that we actually have to experience the pain in order to experience the joy, right?
Oh, I don't like that sentence.
I know. I don't either. But listen to the thought here. So what are we basically saying using this diagram? I think we're saying lean into the guilt gap.
Sure.
Right?
I agree.
So don't, and I think that part of how we spot the guilt gap is by noticing in ourselves strategies to avoid it. Okay. So I'm going to talk about how we close the guilt gap in just a second.
Okay.
This is the teaching lesson that's kind of interesting. So there was, I can't remember what it was on. I heard something, I think it was just even a week or two ago. Yeah, I think it was a week or two ago when we were talking about Nehor and Amlici and some of the antichrists in the Book of Mormon. And we were talking about how they really were known for, and one of their strategies was to tell people what they wanted to hear, right?
Yes.
And it made people comfortable. And on a podcast that week that was associated with that curriculum, someone brought up, he'd gone to divinity school and he said something about, Anyway, he'd said something about the idea that there were these priests and pastors who had kind of a little bit of a conundrum. Because if they told people what they didn't want to hear and preached, you know, actual truth as they understood it, then they wouldn't have people come to church, and their livelihood was dependent upon their congregation coming to church. And so it was a little bit of a dance that they had to do. And they actually would talk about this in divinity school, the dance that you have to do between telling people what they need to know and really kind of leaning into the guilt gap and leading people to the guilt gap, so to speak. And helping them feel a little bit more comfortable.
I've had discussions about this exact thing with members of other faiths. And how, in fact, I remember one guy that I was talking to, he said, our church, we have to, he was basically explaining this. We have to kind of lay off a little bit, but get there a little bit. And he said, what I love about your church, because your pastors aren't paid, they just speak the truth. They just say it, and there is no gap there, is basically what he was saying. It was a pretty cool conversation.
That's awesome. And I think so think about our role as teachers. Obviously, you and I are not in a position, and we do not have a stewardship that requires us to call people to repentance in the
Right.
same way. Like, that's not necessarily what we're trying to do. But if you look at this diagram, what is your role as a teacher?
To bring down the understanding. No,
To
just
bring
kidding.
down the
Just
understanding.
kidding.
Falls, Kevin, you are the worst. You should not be on this podcast. You are not allowed to talk anymore.
No,
You're
no, 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 no,
fired.
no, no. To inspire, to help bring up the behavior to the level
Okay.
of understanding.
So, do we ever get caught up in just thinking that our job is to help increase the understanding and like take the line of understanding and move it up towards absolute truth?
Absolutely. Because that's, I mean, if we think about it, if, when we go in, when we go in and we read Come Follow Me, let's say, for example, right? We're going to teach a lesson on Come Follow Me. Great. It has all these things that we need to teach, but also in there are questions, and these questions are actually really good questions. And some of the questions start to say, hey, so, and some of them, I'm going to put this incorrectly, but how do you measure up to that? How do you fall short of that? How do you, what can you do to increase? And how do you, and it starts to really get to the heart of it, but so many, and make it on a personal level and apply it to our individual circumstances. But so many times we focus on just what we need to teach them. We don't get to that level, right? We almost skip over those things that help the behavior in favor of the topic and the factual absolute truth pieces, because I think those are easier sometimes.
Okay, I think that's so valid. What I hear you saying is that we should be really kind of leaning towards and working towards asking questions that help people examine the gap
Yeah.
and decide what they need to do to change their behavior to meet their level of understanding versus focusing so much on the understanding line and moving that.
And
So,
I think one of the reasons we do that is because there is truth. We can talk about truth, but when we get to the behavior part and trying to help people examine their own behavior and where they are in that line of the behavior to their understanding to to absolute truth, everyone is different. And
yes.
everyone is going in a different direction. Some are going fast towards that, some are going fast in the opposite way, right? And it's all and that gets muddied and difficult to talk about. So it's so much easier to just talk about fasting. And this is how you
Sure,
fast.
right.
And this is what you need to do. Here's an example of fasting.
Yes. So I want you to think about that because what you're describing is basically it's easier, it's more simple, it's less complicated, it's like it feels better almost from the perspective of a teacher, and you can measure success when you are focused on moving the understanding line, right? And what we've acknowledged is that much less important than having where the understanding line is on that vertical axis is where the behavior is as it relates to our understanding.
You said much
So if
less
somebody's,
important.
yet so much less important is where the understanding line is,
Okay.
so much more important is where the behavior line
Gotcha.
is in terms of proximity to the understanding line. Does that make more sense? Sorry, I
Yes.
didn't say it very clearly. So for example, if we are teaching primary kids and their understanding is way down at the very bottom because they're just barely learning about what baptism is for the first time, and they make a commitment to get baptized, their behavior line and their understanding line are boom, they meet, right? And that is just as important as the two meeting once their understanding becomes higher. And so if we want to be more effective teachers, what we're leaning into and trying to figure out is how to help people examine the gap. And that's harder to do. I want you to think about, and then I want to talk about what that actually means for a second, but think really quickly, what are some things that you would do differently in both your prep and in how you facilitate a discussion if your focus is on helping people move their own behavior line.
Want me to answer that now?
If you have an answer, I don't know if you have one off the top of your head. Do you have one off the top of your head that you can think of?
I think it's kind of generic though. I mean, it's more rather than saying, okay, what do I need to teach? I look at something and say, what should we learn from this? And how do we measure up self-evaluation, measure up to that? And then more start asking questions, of course, questions for me, but also examples around how do we move that behavior up? And it is just more behavior focused. It is. So how do you do that? And when we do that, it becomes the discussion becomes more authentic at the same time. Totally. Right?
So I hear you saying, ask more introspective questions.
Yep.
Like really work to get, and we know from, you know, what you've taught us in the past, that takes effort. Like asking really good introspective questions requires you to work and rework those questions to get at what you really want. And so put in the effort to come up with the right questions to help people examine that. Right.
Right.
And then the other part of that, what was it that you said at the end? You said two things, ask the right questions. And then you said one other thing.
Oh, examples or.
Oh yeah. And give me, okay. So this is what it prompted in me too. I'm going to use different words, but I feel like part of what we're saying is we need to put more effort into making the gospel feel real.
Yeah.
Instead of just feel like
words. Yes, yes, yes. So
if I was to say what's different in my prep, for example, I really try and filter it through. So what do I hope people will do differently? What do I hope that they'll walk away thinking about? And part of that means that I'm not leading people to a comfortable place, but I'm actually leading people to an uncomfortable place, which is kind of feels almost, I know, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that if, like, including myself, like if I'm asking the right questions, part of what I'm doing is leaning into any gaps that might exist, and that I'm basically saying that that's a good thing.
So it's interesting that you bring that up, because in the consulting that I've done with companies, some people will ask, so what do you do? And if I'm just being a little bit cheeky, I'll say my job is to make people uncomfortable.
Right. Right.
And that's exactly what I do. And I'm really good at making people uncomfortable, but in a good way. Because you have to show that gap. And then when they realize that gap is there, then you try to work through that gap. But if you don't show the gap, they think everything is just fine. So yeah, you're right on.
Right. I literally said in this class that I was doing yesterday, it was about communication. And so I'm like, okay, now we're going to do it and you're going to suck at it. And that's probably the best instruction that we could possibly have. It's going to be amazing. You're going to love it. And they're like, ah! And really, truly, that is true. Like you have to go to an uncomfortable place and wrestle with it for a minute to make progress. And so this really is, I would say, where growth happens, mm-hmm. is leaning into the guilt gap. That's where growth happens. So now I need to make one more point, because this would be an incomplete model without it.
Okay.
Okay. We can't close the guilt gap by ourselves. So let's look at Hosea. Chapter 15.
Okay.
Okay.
Chase.
So how is the guilt gap closed? Do you want to read 8 and 9 for us?
Sure. And thus God breaketh the bands of death, having gained the victory over death, giving the Son power to make intercession for the children of men, having ascended into heaven, having the bowels of mercy, being filled with compassion towards the children of men, standing betwixt them and justice, having broken the bands of death, taken upon himself their iniquity and their transgressions, having redeemed them and satisfied the demands of justice.
So how is the guilt gap closed?
Well, generically, Jesus.
Right? So grace has to be and has to fill that gap too. Yes. And so we can do everything that we can. We can make every effort behaviorally to close the guilt gap. But if we don't acknowledge the fact that the strength to do it and the repentance required as we do is what actually closes it, then we're missing the point. And so part of, you know, as we talk to our classes, as we're prepping, as we're doing all of this, if we are focused only on people changing behavior, then we've also missed the point. Mm-hmm. We still need to be pointing them to Jesus, who through his grace fills the guilt gap.
Oh, that's so good.
Right? That was where I was leaning today. I really do feel like that's a little bit of a reframe.
If I could bottle that last statement up that you just said. Okay, I'm going to bottle up in my own words, because I love that. You have understanding, you have behavior, and you have Jesus. A lot of us focus on understanding. What's better is to focus on the behavior. What's better is to focus on Jesus, who helps us with the behavior to get to the level of understanding that we have. There's, I don't want to say a hierarchy there, but almost a hierarchy. And I think that's profound, honestly. Because by default, we go to the understanding level. We teach at the understanding level. It's harder to get to the behavior level. And it's harder to get to the Jesus level. Although, okay, let me throw this out. I think a lot of people go from understanding to Jesus and skip the behavior.
Right.
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 And so,
because we're saved when we embrace Jesus, like there you go.
Yeah, done. Right. Wait, what about the behavior? What about the middle part? What about the part that he brings? He heals us. His grace allows us to overcome that guilt gap.
Right.
And how for you, Julie? I mean, and really getting into whether it's a son or daughter or someone who investigating the church or a class. How do we really get in and start to say, what is your behavior? Or how can you evaluate your behavior on your own? And what can you do? And what can we do to help you do that? But always pointing back to Jesus is the ultimate doing that. That's just so good. I love that.
Can I add one more thing to it? Because this is something that really struck me. And maybe it's because I'm a very visual learner. But I started thinking about what condescension means then in this regard.
Oh, and so, sure. Like, using this
model. And I started thinking about condescension visually as Christ coming down below our behavior or meeting us at the behavior line. And then his job isn't to just force us, but to help us bear the burden of that line too. Like, that's where his enabling power comes in, is in helping us to lift that line. But in order for him to be able to do that, he literally had to kind of, I'm not saying he behaviorally does this, but in a very literal sense, this is part of what the atonement was, part of what his condescension was, is meeting us wherever, it gives him the capacity to meet us wherever we are. Mm-hmm. And his goal is to help us lift the line. But he does it from below. He's not up above trying to like pull us up. Condescension means that he comes below the line. I don't know. That's how I visualize it.
Okay, let me add another. As you said that, visually it's going through my head as well, because I like to visually do things as well and show how this might work. All of a sudden, when you said that, what came into my mind was my behavior is like, I mean, let's take fasting. My efforts, my behavior is just a lump of coal. And he comes up and he pushes that up, straight up to the level of understanding that I have. And of course, if you take coal and apply some serious pressure on it, when you have that major pressure, it becomes a diamond and you can walk out. And that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to make our behavior, or help our behavior, not only become closer to the understanding, but who we are on the inside, go from a coal to a diamond. And it's mm-hmm. and in that process, through that pain that we talked about earlier, that's exactly what happens.
Right. The refinement, the yes. change, the becoming. Yes.
Yes.
I agree.
Okay. I got one more thing that you made me think of that I just actually got really so excited about. Earlier when, and I just wrote this down to say this, but one thing that, stood out to me was the phrase line upon line. And I suddenly realized, and I had thought about this before, but not to this level, of how inspired line upon line is, precept upon precept. Because think about this, if we have this guilt gap, if we have this gap between our understanding and behavior, and we finally close that, we get to the understanding, we're like, okay, I am where I get it. And then we're taught something new and it creates another gap. We're like, oh, I got to get there. Now imagine if he just threw everything at us and our behavior was here and the understanding was way up, the guilt gap would be insurmountable.
Paralyzing.
So, yes. So line upon line, precept upon precept is a principle of mercy for us.
Oh, I love that. I love that because I can see that in my mind looking at this. Like, so would it be fair to say that this line upon line concept is a principle of mercy, but also a stretching principle? Because
yes,
literally he's trying to create gaps for us. Like in right. the gaps, we can find motivation and inspiration, or in the gaps, we can find discomfort and guilt and shame and all of those things. And so it really is about how we choose to approach the gaps.
Because
when we look at that gap as a blessing, because it's an opportunity for growth and opportunity, it's kind of like feedback. It's like we are getting divine feedback that moves the line just a little bit. And we're like, ooh, I gotta adjust. I gotta pivot. Mm-hmm. And that can be an inspiring kind of a growth opportunity and a fantastic thing for us. But we can also look at that as being like, oh, nodding. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I love that. That's a great visual there.
So earlier when I said in my consulting, my job is to make people uncomfortable, I just realized that that's God's job too.
Nailed it.
Really, he wants us to be a bit uncomfortable because as someone else says, it was in a general conference. I don't remember who said it, but something along the lines of come as you are, but don't expect to stay as you Jeffrey are. Erhard. There you Jeffrey go. Erhard. Thank you. Yep. Yeah. Right. And I love that. And that's the way I feel that our Father in Heaven deals with us. It's come as you are. Great. I love you as you are. You're here.
But wherever let me increase that.
Yeah. Let me increase your understanding. Oh, he just created a gap to where I feel uncomfortable. Well, let's with Christ, let's push up to that line. Okay. Now here's a little bit more. And it's almost, I almost feel that if I don't feel uncomfortable, something's wrong. And that is honestly the way I felt. And I have felt that for years that if I am feeling great, I need to take a look at something. And because right. I'm not stretching enough, I almost want guilt, but I don't. I almost want to be right. stretched and I almost want pain, but I don't want it.
So would it be terrible for us to say, go out and make people uncomfortable. You're doing a good job. I don't know if that's inspiring. I don't know that is.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, you know, hopefully, I don't know. I just really feel like our job is to help people reflect on the gap. And then remember that Jesus can help him close it.
I love it. Thank you. What a great, I don't know if it's just that we're giddy because we're so tired.
We made some good points even though we were tired. Good job, Buzz.
There were some great points in this. I love this. This is so, I'm going to be thinking about this for quite some time, at least until I take a nap. At least. No, I mean, really, I'm going to be thinking about a number of these concepts for a while. This is good stuff.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it for a while too. It's pretty cool, huh?
Wow, thank you. Oh, love it, love it, love it. Okay, so Julie just did this awesome way of thinking about how we teach and what level we teach at and, you know, what we're doing and Christ's role in all this. I mean, so many different levels. I could go on and on about different ways of looking at this. But as Julie said at the beginning, tell us what you want to learn. What kind of troubles or difficulties do you have that, you know, you're struggling with? What is that? And how might we be able to address that and maybe give some ideas? We want to know those. If you go to teachingrestored.com, you can message us there, or you can message us on Facebook, on, Instagram, YouTube, and even in the comments in the episodes of the podcast. Feel free to do that. Let us know where you're struggling, and let's see if we can put our heads together and help out with something, because we want to help you be a better teacher. So thanks for being here. Thank you, Julie. This was awesome. I loved it.
Thank you.
All right. Share, like, subscribe, and do all that, and tell us how we can help. Thanks for coming, everybody. Take care. Bye.